my favourite thing to do, especially in work situations, if people are talking about the awful D word and, you know, weight loss and stuff, is to sit there and go, well, I'm fat and I'm happy. And it just stops people because they don't know how to respond to that.
I have to say, when I call myself that in like mixed company, usually two things happen. One, there's like that collective intake of air, that, you know, kind of gasp thing. But the other thing is that people are always really quick to reassure me that I'm not, in fact, fat. Which, and I appreciate, like, again, your listeners can't see me. I am super fat. Like, I'm not just, like, fat. I can't walk into a store in New Zealand and buy clothes kind of fat. So there's no ambiguity about whether or not I am fat or not.
Kia ora and welcome back to the C Word, Kiwis Talk About Cancer. We're your hosts, Helen King
and Belinda Tran Lawrence.
If you like what you hear, hit subscribe on iTunes or follow us on Spotify. And welcome back, Belinda. You weren't here last week, so it's very nice to have you back in the co-pilot seat.
The co-pilot seat today is next to my fire in Taranaki because it has been pouring down all afternoon, but it's so nice and cozy. And you guys can't see me, thank goodness, because I am wearing my pajamas, my Winnie the Pooh pajamas.
I'm in my home uniform, so that's all good. And it is really cool to have you back, Belinda, because I know today's topic is something that we have talked about before. And I think it's a topic that could be slightly controversial for our listeners or could leave you feeling a little bit uncomfortable. But as we said before we hit record, we're not here to make people feel comfortable.
Oh, really? Because I thought we were. I thought week by week we really just talk about safe, nice topics like cookies.
That's not our show.
Oh, you mean the C Word is not the cookie show?
No, it's not. It's not. I do love a cookie, but let's not go down that tangent. So today what we're talking about is fatness or being fat. And it's something that we are conditioned and socialized to avoid at all costs. I mean, we know that the diet industry makes billions of dollars a year, and they are capitalizing out of that fear of fatness. But what we really wanted to explore today, and it's something that I am very interested in as a self-identifying fat person, is how does fat bias impact access to good healthcare? And actually, how does fat bias prevent us from getting the care that you need? So our guest today is the amazing Dr. Kat Pause from Massey University. She is a senior lecturer, and her work looks at the impact of fat stigma on health and well-being of fat people. And she also hosts an amazing weekly podcast, Friend of Marilyn, where she talks about fat issues. Welcome, Kat.
Welcome. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's awesome to have you. We actually had a discussion, Belinda and I, it must have been weeks or a couple of months ago about...
Yeah, it's been a while ago now, yeah.
Yeah, and we were thinking, oh, we need to talk about this. And I knew as soon as the conversation started, well, I know exactly who to contact.
Yeah, and I think when we had that conversation, Helen, didn't I say to you, I listened to this amazing woman once when I was doing my, so Kat, I did my studies extramurally, it's not extramural anymore, through distance, through Massey, and then I did my teaching postgrad through Massey University, and I now work for Massey University, but when I was doing my teaching postgrad, you came and you talked to the postgrad students. Mm-hmm. You're probably not. It's a few years, six, seven, eight, yeah, something like that, years back now. But I will never forget that talk that you gave us. I was sitting next to a woman who And I know that you use the word fat and you talk a lot about being comfortable with using that word, but I know that the woman I was sitting next to would not have used that word. Mm-hmm. She was a bigger woman, and it was so interesting, the feeling in the room. We had lots of young people who were studying to be PE teachers. Mm. And then there was those of us who were studying the social sciences, and I loved your talk. There was only, I don't know how many people in the room actually agreed with what you it was a fair amount of muttering during and then lots of talking afterwards, but they were such great conversations that, and the way you spoke and the energy that you brought to the room, I've never forgotten that. Yeah, so when we were talking, I'm like, Helen, I know someone, I can't remember her name, but I know someone.
And that's you. So it's so cool. This is a bit personal for me, I think, because, you know, if we think about fatness, I would say I'm a mid-sized fat. I can still go into the mall and, you know, I could find something that fit me, not in all mainstream shops, but there, you know, maybe in a specialised shop or Kmart warehouse and those sorts of things. So I do understand that, you know, there's a certain level of privilege in still being able to fit things. But I'd love to start with you at the very basics of how does fat bias work? What is fat bias?
Yeah, I'm like, how does it work? I'm not entirely sure how to answer that. What I can say is that fat stigma is often used as a globalized phrase to capture all of the various negative attitudes we hold around fatness and how those attitudes are then translated to fat people through the things people say, the way that they look at them, the many microaggressions that fat people might experience throughout a normal day. And all of that stigma that they might experience is going to come kind of from every direction in their lives. So it's going to come from their family. It's going to come from what they learn in school. It's going to come from their employment settings. It's going to come from every time they sit down to watch television or a movie. It's not unlikely that there will be some kind of anti-fat message that's included that will, you know, always remind them that there's something wrong with them and that they are less than because of their size.
Yeah, it's such a insidious message, I think, because I think my weight has gone up and down throughout my adult life, and I actually came to a place of self-love and acceptance, and you know, your work was part of that, and also, you know, finding the fat acceptance movement online and just seeing other bodies like mine and people, you know, embracing it, wearing the clothes that they felt good in. And part of that for me was finding it was mostly overseas sites. And then I had back problems. And the surgeon said, if you lose weight, it will, you know, everything will magically be better. And so against my, you know, what I knew in my heart to be, you know, true, I did do that. And I always think about how differently people reacted to me when I had lost the weight and how amazing it was and how good it was. And I have since put it back on, as is the way of weight cycling. And my back pain has never come back. And I just, yeah. And I know so many people that, you know, you go to a medical provider as a larger person and, you know, this is the classic thing of, you know, my arm's fallen off. Have you thought about losing weight?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, what we know is that fat people are less likely to access healthcare, and then they're less likely to receive evidence-based and bias-free healthcare when they do. If I were to actually speak like specifically to cancer, we know that fat cis women are less likely to receive specific screenings like cervical cancer screening, breast cancer screening, colorectal screening than non-fat cis women. When I think about, you know, the attention that has been locally in the news about colorectal cancer and other types of cancer that are more common in Māori, and, you know, the refusal to adjust down screening ages for that, and, you know, how just rageful that kind of makes me, I can't help but think about the fat Māori women who are even less likely, possibly even when all screening indicators suggest otherwise, to receive that kind of screening from their healthcare providers simply because of their body size.
Is that about them not wanting to go to the doctor, or is that actually about the doctors not referring them on for that screening?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's very much two kind of main aspects to this. One is that doctors are just as likely, and in fact, more likely to hold negative attitudes about fatness than the general population. What we know from research is that doctors spend less time with their fat patients. They respect their fat patients less. They request fewer preventative and diagnostic tests and screening for their fat patients and their non-fat patients. Some are very honest about that they don't want to have to provide care for fat people, that they don't respect fat people. They don't believe fat people are as compliant with healthcare instructions. And, you know, so all of those things mean that when fat people do seek medical care, it's unlikely that they're going to get evidence-based care and bias-free care. You couple that along with the fact that there are other barriers in those healthcare settings as well, which include the inadequate equipment. Mm-hmm. So whether or not there's a blood pressure cuff, for example, mm-hmm. in the room that you're in that can fit a fat arm, whether we're talking about the chairs in the practice and if you can fit into those, mm-hmm. whether the gowns can fit a fat body, but also just the lack of education. So, you know, one of the reasons why doctors might be performing fewer diagnostic tests for fat people is they don't actually have the skills to do it. So a doctor doesn't learn in med school, for example, how to palpate a fat abdomen. And it is different to perform a screening like that on a fat abdomen than it is on a non-fat abdomen. So, you know, all of those things make it mean that when fat people go to the doctor, it's not going to necessarily be the best experience. And of course, as you found with your experience with the back pain, most fat people's experience at the doctors has also included a nice slice of fat stigma. Yeah. You know, they're often diagnosed as fat, no matter what else is kind of going on with them. They're often shamed in those spaces, and they often don't necessarily get kind of the health advice or care that they need. And so it's understandable to me why so many fat people choose not to go if they can help it, because why would they if they know that they're going to get poor care that's going to just include a nice side of shame along with it?
Would you like a free slice of shame?
Would you like some shame with your shitty healthcare?
Yeah,
it's one of the things that really stuck with me that time I heard you speak, is you talked about how fat shaming is kind of the last bastion of what is okay in society. You know, we know it's not okay to make fun of someone because they're in a wheelchair, for example, but you talked about how we seem to feel like it's okay to make fun of someone if they're fat.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that it's the last bastion or the last socially acceptable form of it, because I at least the culture I live in, it's, you know, sexism is still very much okay. Racism is still very much okay. Homophobia is everywhere I look. I think one of the things that is different, though, is that fat people currently don't have equal protection under the law here in New Zealand or in most other places around the world. So while other things such as gender, race, disability are protected classes under the Human Rights Act of 1993 here in New Zealand, body size is not. So a fat person can be denied housing, education, employment, all of, you know, we can be legally discriminated against because we don't have equal protection under the law.
It just makes me so enraged. And it is that sort of thing of having to sometimes just put up with it. And I think about, the specialist letter back to my GP after my back pain. And I'm sure he described me as a pleasant, obese woman.
There you go. That's awesome.
Wow, come on. You were pleasant. You know, he probably felt like there's a compliment going on there.
Yeah. I find it really interesting within a cancer community and especially I think for women, you know, when we've had breast cancer, it can change our body shapes. You know, people can gain weight because of treatment and the fact that, you know, post-cancer you can be extremely fatigued. And that people, that it's so, I don't know, it's almost like it's this huge thing that impacts their well-being. And it really, I don't know, sometimes I think, God, like that's the least of our worries, you know? Because it was interesting in some of my cancer journey, and I hate using that word, but my treatment journey, my oncologist never, ever had anything to say about my weight. And I always found this quite intriguing because I was ready for it. I was really ready for someone to say, you got breast cancer because you, on your BMI, you are, you know, you should drop dead at some point. Because my BMI puts me in the sort of mega obese category, I think. And there was never any mention of it. And in fact, I said to him in one of the last appointments, if I lose weight, does that mean my chance of surviving longer is increased? And he said, no. He said, there's nothing to suggest that your weight will impact your survival. He said, getting good exercise and, you know, eating a good diet, but he never said anything about weight. And I always found that very intriguing that he was one person that I'd come across that didn't, you know.
Yeah.
It's certainly something that gets talked about a lot amongst women. Possibly, I think maybe men as well within the cancer community, is how not to put weight on when you're going through treatment, the issues about taking weight off after treatment, particularly women who have had breast surgery. They refer to their stomachs, a common phrase is the Buddha belly, and that, you know, how do I get rid of this?
Yeah,
it's so much more noticeable now that I don't have breasts because, you know, your body changes. It changes the way it looks, the way that it feels. So much changes. I've always found it interesting how so much of the focus does tend to be around weight rather than potentially how you feel or your well-being or how much exercise you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, personally for me, Belinda, I don't find that surprising at all. But you know, I am a super fat person living through the world as an always fat person. You know, we live in a fat hating society, and that's pretty much true across the entire world, from what we know from the literature. And it's interesting because it starts very young, so we can identify fat hating at around age 3 for little children, where, you know, they'll identify that they don't want to be friends with the fat kid because that's the bad kid. And how do they know that they're bad? Well, because they're fat. You know, we obviously, you know, find it in a lot of younger people who have developed disordered eating or full-blown eating disorders. I think one of the most powerful and impactful studies for me, and this is quite old, but I think it probably would still bear true, was a study that found that women in the United States in middle age, so approximately between 40 and 60, would rather lose a decade of their life than gain 10 kilos.
It wouldn't surprise me if that was still, yeah.
Mm. You know, that speaks so strongly to how terrified people are of fatness, of fat bodies, of fat people, about becoming fat themselves. And, you know, that then, of course, translate into the stigma and oppression that fat people themselves experience. But it also impacts really strongly on non-fat people as well, whether it's the fear that they're experiencing about it. There's been really good research that demonstrates that doctors actually don't often or are less likely to talk to their non-fat patients about issues of diet and exercise because they make the assumption that a lot of other people make that, well, you're not fat, so you must be eating well, right, and exercising, as I'm putting these things in air quotes for the listeners that can't see me. So the fat-hating part ideology that we all exist in, it's harmful for all of us,
yes,
regardless of your body size.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's unfortunately a lot of systems, including white supremacy, patriarchy, capitalism, neoliberalism, that all, you know, feed into this ideology and make it very difficult to push back against.
Absolutely. And I think it's been at least over a decade for me now where I started, exploring the idea of, you know, fat acceptance and just around those sorts of ideas and those sorts of things. And I know I've been through so many sort of peaks and troughs with it of letting go of the idea of being a good fatty because, you know, you exercise or having, you know, I think there's so much pressure on larger bodies to prove that you're trying to, you know, be a certain way when actually everyone just deserves, you know, access to good healthcare, access to being treated like a human being, even if...
Equal protection under the law.
Yeah, equal protection
under the law. Let's go nuts.
Yeah. Why not? Freedom for all.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about this, actually. I've been thinking about this all day, and because I haven't had children, but I was able to have we've had embryos frozen. And so this year, because I'm 2 years post-diagnosis, I was able to sort of have that conversation. And I'm too fat to be funded to have them implanted.
Awesome.
But they will do it if I pay them. But what blew my mind about the conversation that I had with the fertility specialist about it was that if I lost 17 kilos before I turned 40, which is in December, then my BMI would have been in the acceptable range. But being in that acceptable range, they could not tell me if my outcome of that implantation being successful was any different from the size I am now. And I find that so intriguing that we still hold on to the BMI as some sort of, you know, marker of health when it has been clearer and clearer as the years go by that it's just bullshit. And that, you know, that conversation to me was an example of it, of, so what you're telling me is that you want me to thrash my body to get to a certain size, but that doesn't actually guarantee me any, you know, reassurance of outcome.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, you know, things like that are just scattered throughout all of life, you know, whether it's, as you said, you know, not being eligible to participate in that kind of fertility treatment. Mm. There are many parts of the world where fat people aren't allowed to adopt children.
Yeah.
There are, you know, lots of, I remember something from kind of earlier into the COVID-19 thing, and I must have been the UK because they're one of the worst offenders.
Yeah.
You know, just these random kind of arbitrary, like, you know, people with a BMI over 30, like, they just don't get this. We're not going to allow them to have it. And of course, all of that is you know, wrapped within, you know, the fat hating ideology. But a lot of that is underpinning. It's about eugenics. It is about ridding the world of fat people. And many governments around the world actively engage in those kinds of eugenic campaigns. They put millions of dollars into public health programs that are about getting rid of people like me. And personally, I would rather my tax dollars didn't go towards getting rid of people like me. But yeah, unfortunately, so many of those things are truly arbitrary in the sense of there's no evidence to suggest that, you know, there's something about fat people that says they can't be parents once they hit a certain BMI, or as you said, you know, that your success rates would be increased or improved if you were to weigh a little less, or all of it is nonsense. Like, all of it is built upon the nonsense ideas that being fat is unhealthy, that we know how to make fat people non-fat, and that if we knew how to do that, which we don't, but because we don't know how to do that, we actually don't have any evidence to then say that once fat, now non-fat people might have the same health benefits as never fat non-fat people, because we can't keep enough of them non-fat long enough. Like, oh, it's all just largely without any evidence other than just the visceral gut reaction that people have that goes, ew, fatty.
Yeah.
Okay. Can I, just what you were talking about there, I think listeners would be really interested, because within the world of cancer, there is a lot said about better outcomes for people who weigh less. Or not just once you've got cancer, but also that you're less likely to get cancer if you weigh less. I mean, this is certainly not what I have seen. There doesn't seem to be a lot of visual evidence of this. But this is definitely a lot of what is driving people, is the idea that I'm going to be healthier if I'm smaller. And what you're saying to that is you're saying that the evidence doesn't stack up for that.
Yeah, and I feel very comfortable saying that. I think that what unfortunately happens so often is that we confuse health behaviors with body size. So I would not suggest that exercising regularly, getting lots of food with good fiber and green vegetable, like not smoking, wearing seatbelts in the car, helmets on your bike, 8 hours of sleep a night, we have really good evidence to suggest that engaging in what we would call health-seeking behaviors can benefit individuals' health. Unfortunately, what happens is that we often confuse or make a proxy for health people's body size. And part of that confusion then becomes this idea that, well, fat people must be fat because they never exercise and never eat healthily, again with the air quotes, and by that same token, non-fat people are non-fat because they exercise regularly and only eat healthy, again air quotes, kinds of foods. I think that we do a real disservice again to people of all sizes when we make those conflations of error. And I'm always amazed by how many people often reach out to me after I've done a media appearance talking about size not being the same thing as health and health and fatness also not being a behavior itself. Because oftentimes, like, you see it listed as like, these are the risk-taking behaviors, smoking, drinking, eating red meat too often, obesity. And it's like, my body size, it's not a behavior. This is not something I do. But I'm always amazed by how many people often reach out to me to say, to identify and let me know that that they're non-fat, that they smoke, that they rarely eat anything other than fast food, but that no one, including their doctors, ever hassle them about their health or, you know, risks for things simply because they're not fat. Yeah. You know, they're kind of given this pass that, you know, because of their body size, we believe that that lets us know that, oh, you know, that person's making the quote right decisions that are going to lead them to good health.
Yeah. It's, yeah. I mean, this has been the story of my adult life, I think, of trying to, you know, trying to sort of argue with people about, you know, my health and things like that. And I actually point out that before I got cancer, I had been a good, you know, a good patient, and I had lost the weight and I exercised regularly and I ate well and all of those things, and I got cancer. And now...
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, the thing about it is that there are no, like, there's no fatty disease. Like, there's no health condition or illness or diagnosis that fat people get that non-fat people don't get. We do see some examples of confirmation bias. So like type 2 diabetes is probably the best example of that. A lot of people, including unfortunately doctors, associate type 2 diabetes with fat people. And what diabetic scholars fear and warn about is the fact that there are lots of non-fat people who have type 2 diabetes who are simply never screened, because the doctors that they see, even when they might share symptoms that should, you know, kind of alert someone to it, they don't think about it because it's considered a, you know, something that only fat people get. On the same token, an example of something that's common of that for fat people specifically are eating disorders.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, very difficult for a fat person to be diagnosed and receive appropriate treatment for an eating disorder, because all of the things that they might say to their doctor about the ways that they're thinking about food and how stringent and strict they're being about diet and exercise, a lot of doctors are going to congratulate them and tell them to keep going. Whereas if a non-fat person had shared the exact same behaviors and cognitive patterns, they would have immediately recognized that as an eating disorder that was life-threatening and needed to be treated.
I was just thinking, of some of the points that you've been making, Kat, and for the past year, that one of the communities that I've worked in has been the Pacifica community here in Auckland, where there is a lot of talk, you know, there's a lot of stuff about obesity and the, you know, comorbidities and those sorts of things, and the type 2 diabetes. And I can't help but look at it and think, because we know that shaming people doesn't make them, you know, change behaviors or, you know, love themselves, which is actually what we want people to be doing.
You can't hate someone healthy. I think this is something that we often say.
Yeah.
Shockingly, you can't hate someone. And I mean, the thing about it is that, you know, when we're talking about the impact of stigma on health and well-being, we are slowly gathering data around that for fat stigma. But we have decades of research that's been done looking at the impact of other stigmas and oppressions like racism. And what we know is that racism is one of the strongest social, what we call social determinants of health. And the research that we do have, and that again, we're still building a literature like exists for others, is that fat stigma is a huge social determinant of health. And if we are going to suggest that there is an inequity in overall health outcomes between fat people and non-fat people, most people would point to fatness, right? The actual physical state of being fat, and say it's the physiological aspect of being fat that causes those discrepancies. Other people like myself would point more so to the stigma and saying, you know, growing up in a world that hates you, having doctors refuse to give you good care, keeping yourself out of healthcare situations until it's absolutely drastically dire because of the poor experiences that you've had. Maybe all of those things are a much better explanation when fat people have poorer health than non-fat people.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, if you add on the layer of, you know, race on top of that, you've
got... The intersectionality, absolutely. So, you know, I carry so much privilege being a white well-educated fat person, even as a super fat person, right? My whiteness protects me from so much stuff that fat people of color and fat indigenous people, you know, the ways that those intersections of those, and then you can add on so many other things in terms of disability and social class and everything else. And, you know, it's just, yeah, it just makes it make, for me, fat people are amazing. I love fat people. I'm doing everything I can to try to get them equal protection under the law here in my new home. And, you know, I'd really love to see the structures get changed here in New Zealand to guarantee that all fat people have equal access to good healthcare, right? I want all doctors to feel comfortable treating people of all body sizes and, you know, to be less, if, you know, can I go for less? Like, that's such a small thing. Like, I want doctors to not be fat phobic.
Yeah.
Right? Like, even if we have to take that in small doses.
Yes. Yeah.
Kat, I feel like this is maybe something we should have discussed at the beginning, but for most people within society, fat is thought of as not a nice word. You know, it's not what we would use to apply to ourselves or other people because of the feeling surrounding that. But obviously, just within the last half hour, we've said that word quite a few times.
Like a thousand times.
Do you want to just kind of explain to our listeners why you choose to use that word?
So I use the word fat for two main reasons. One is that it has become a very political word for those of us that do fat politics. And so we have reclaimed that word back from the way that it has been weaponized against us our whole lives, in a similar way that, you know, other groups have reclaimed the word queer. And, you know, other words that, you know, have long histories of being derogatory terms. The other reason that I use it is because I do feel it's the most apt descriptor for myself and for people like me. I fully reject what I would call the O words. So that would be overweight, which is a norming word that applies. There's like a weight to be. Yeah. And I believe that humans are much more varied than to suggest that they should all be, you know, kind of in a small little box. The other O word being obese, that is a word that it's a medical word that is about pathologizing, meaning to make the disease of my body size. And of course, I reject the fact that I am a disease, that my size is a disease. So I don't find the O words useful. I know a lot of fat people that don't like the O words, but still prefer other euphemisms. So like fluffy or Rubenesque or large or plus size or big boned. And I'm very happy for people to self-identify how they are most comfortable. I think fat is the best descriptor for, you know, a part of me. So I am short. I have red hair. I am fat.
I love it. And I think I learned from people like yourself and, you know, others that I discovered on that kind of at the start of my exploration into my identity and those sorts of things, of owning that. And I know I'm probably considered a medium fat, but being able to just use that word and go, it's just a descriptor. My body's a bit bigger. You know, that's all it is. And I can always, my favourite thing to do, especially in work situations, if people are talking about the awful D word and, you know, weight loss and stuff, is to sit there and go, well, I am fat and I am happy. And it just stops people because they don't know how to respond to that.
I have to say, when I call myself fat in like mixed company, usually two things happen. One, there's like that collective intake of air that... you know, kind of gasp thing. But the other thing is that people are always really quick to reassure me that I'm not, in fact, fat, which, and I appreciate, like, again, your listeners can't see me. I am super fat. Like, I'm not just, like, fat. I can't walk into a store in New Zealand and buy clothes kind of fat. So there's no ambiguity about whether or not I am fat or not. What I did finally figure out, though, shortly into my journey into fat activism and fat liberation is that what people meant when they were quick to rush to be like, oh no, you're not fat, you're not fat. What they were trying to say is that I wasn't the things that they associate with that word. That for them, they couldn't, when they heard that word, they couldn't not associate it with negative things like lazy, smelly, unattractive, stupid, unsuccessful, lacking of worth. They didn't think of me as those things. And so they were quick to be like, no, 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 you're not fat, you're not fat. And so, of course, a big thing that fat activists try to do is to, you know, encourage people to, one, be reflective of when you tell me I'm not fat, or when you say to yourself, I'm feeling fat today, what are you actually trying to say? Like, what are you wanting to say, but using fat as a shorthand for? Because let's unpack what that means to you. Let's unpack where that came from, like how you learned that. Yeah. And let's think about who benefits from you having that belief. So I use the word fat. I call other fat people fat. I would encourage everyone, even people who think that's a very offensive word, right? I call it one of the F words. You know, it's like feminism. You know, I would encourage everyone to use that word. And if they're really uncomfortable with it, I'd encourage them to sit and reflect why.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would encourage people, because I know that these ideas, if you haven't been exposed to them, can be really confronting and you can feel uncomfortable. And I posted something, actually, when I was told that I was too fat to be funded for, you know, implantation. And I stated that quite clearly on my personal Facebook. And then I had this onslaught of diet advice.
Advice. I remember that. I was dumbstruck. It's like, people, she's not asking you to help her lose weight.
No.
And that's how everybody interpreted it. I think we didn't know one another very well at that point, I don't think. And I was just like, whoa.
Yeah, and it was really interesting because I just stood my ground and went, that's not what I'm talking about, because the doctor very clearly said to me that the main main factor for me is my age. That's it. I can't change my age. I can't go on a special diet to undo being 40 in December. What I'd love for our listeners to do is think about how you're reacting to what we're talking about and kind of explore whether this is internalized fat stigma and whether this is that internalized stuff, because, you know, I definitely still have it and I definitely, you know, catch my reactions and things. And it's a long process, but just sit with it before you get on and tell us that we're glorifying obesity.
Who will think of the children, Helen? That's one of my favorite. So that's one of the things that I call a fat herring. Actually, health is the big one, right? Anytime I want to talk about fat people having equal protection under the law, someone's like, "Well, what about their health?" And I'm like, "Really? Are you suggesting that someone's human rights should be based on their health status? Like, is that really a door that you're trying to open?"
Yeah.
But the other one is this, you know, this idea that you're glorifying obesity. And first of all, most people can't actually explain to me what that means when they say it to me, because they don't know. It's just something that they heard a pundit say one day and have picked it up as something that they use, you know. But it's just amazing to me for two reasons. I mean, one, there are not government campaigns to make people fatter. There's not an $80 billion a year industry to help people gain weight. There's like, no, that is not a thing. Just no. But the second thing about it is that, like, even if the work that I do and the work that other activists does, which I absolutely do work that celebrates fatness, I'm not going to, you know, deny that or play that down. Like, that is part of what my work is about, because fat people are amazing and, you know, they should be treated as such. But, like, even if my work were to somehow, you know, become quite common and, like, even quote-unquote normal, I am amazed at this idea that people think that other people are going to look at my work that I'm doing and be like, you know what? I do want to be fat. Oh, you know what? I've decided. I want to be a fat person. I want to become fat. That's exactly what I want to be. Yeah. And then try to make that happen. It's just ridiculous. Because we live in a fat-hating world. And everyone knows that. And everyone feels that. And it doesn't matter how many fat-positive Instagram accounts are going to pop up. Mm. People are not all of a sudden going to want to start being fat. Like... Sorry. I just wrote a chapter about this for my book like 3 days ago. So it's very front of mind for me. It's nonsense.
Yes, it is. Utter nonsense. Well, before we keep glorifying obesity, I'm going to go have something to eat and have carbohydrates and all those lovely things. Thank you so much for joining us. It's been so cool to chat and, talk about some of these things. Because I've seen it over the past couple of years in different sort of cancer support groups, that shame and stigma over larger bodies. And I just feel like once you've been through something as enormous as cancer, actually the size of your body is just, why waste any more time being in that place when we just need to live, we need to enjoy it. So thank you.
Thank you very much for having me on. I really appreciated it.
Yeah, it was fantastic chatting. Given that the last time I listened to you speak was quite some years ago now, and it was really nice to revisit some of those ideas and have you on.
And thank you, our dear listeners, for listening. We do have some shout-outs for our wonderful supporters who have pledged to our campaign. They are, in no particular order, big shout out to Fiona Melrose, Jen Watts, Craig Hoyle and Charlotte Fowler. You're all in the draw for a Whoop meal kit. And if you want a shout out, you can go to our Pledge Me campaign. The link is on our Facebook page and we are inching ever so closer to our goal and every dollar counts because Pledge Me is slightly different in that we get the money if we get our target. So please help us and every little bit counts. $5, whatever you've got, please donate.
We are halfway to our goal. If you've been on our Pledge Me page, you will see that our goal is 3,000. And I think we're a little bit over 1,500 today. So I keep telling Helen that she needs to video herself doing a happy dance every time we get a pledge. But so far there's me, no. What about singing? You could sing. You could do a song. And put
computer
that
says no to that.
Oh, she's not looking too keen. However, next week, by the time we record again next week, Helen and I would have met, we think.
For the first time.
And we're going to do some photos. I'm hoping that my husband is going to be very nice and do some photos of us and our brand new merchandise because we are amazing.
Yes.
And we know we're amazing because... it tells us we're amazing.
So if you want to be a walking motivational poster, please jump onto our Pledge Me campaign. And we have T-shirts and hoodies. And we also have some very functional and environmentally friendly tote bags, which are great all year round, especially coming up to summer. You can just put your stuff in there, head to the beach. I'm sure we'll be able to go to the beach by then and socially distance.
And given that we have just been talking about inclusivity and fatness, do be aware that if you hop on there and decide that you really want a T-shirt or a hoodie that says you're doing amazing, they are in inclusive sizing. So whatever size you are, big, small, square, triangular, rectangular, we will definitely find a T-shirt or a hoodie that will fit your particular body type.
Yes, indeed, because that is important. So we air every Sunday at 11:55 a.m. on 104.5 88.6 Planet FM or anytime at www.planetaudio.org.nz/thecword. Thanks for joining us.
When the Neptune's and the doggy dog finna spit, you know he's in tune with the season. Come here, baby, tell me why you leaving. Tell me if it's weed that you need, if you wanna breathe. I got the best weed by the seas. Ain't nobody tripping, VIP they can't get in. If something go wrong, then you know we get to gripping.
I see you, but don't fuck with me. Are you telling me this is a sign? She's looking in my eyes. No single other guys. Are you telling me this?
Don't think about it before we come alone. Nigga, you ain't no king. She likes my tone, my cologne, and the way I roll. You ain't no king.
Now you step in with a G from Los Angeles, where the helicopters got cameras, just to get a glimpse of our chucks and our khakis and our bouncer car. You with your friend, right?
Yeah.
She ain't trying to bring over no men, right?
No.
She ain't gotta be in the distance. She can get high all in an instant.
I'm not sure what I see. You don't fuck with me. Are you telling me this is a sign? She's looking in my eyes. No single other guys. Are you telling me this is a sign?
Have you ever flown on G5 from London to Ibiza? You gotta have cake till you'll have Sundays with your key times. You'll see Venus and Serena in the Wimbledon arena. And I
think Uncle Charlie,
you
can
tell me you're foolish. You don't know what you're doing. You don't know what you lost until she's gone. Snoop Doggy Dogg style.
I'm not sure what I see. You don't fuck with me. Are you telling me this is a sign? She's looking in my eyes. No single other guys. Are you telling me this is a sign?
ain't okay.
Un pasito que te voy a enseñar, un menito que sé que te gustará.
y cuando apenas a bailarlo con sabor, te aseguro que este ritmo gozarás.